Family Room Podcast, where I, Peter Squires, get to know your friends and neighbors. My family, they never knew. My family, they never knew. My family. Welcome to the Family Room Podcast, getting to know your friends and neighbors. I'm Peter Squires. My guest on this episode is Sejin Ka, head coffee roaster at White Heron Tea and Coffee, singer in the group Vesper and the choir Amari Kantari, and sometime model for photographer Michael Winters. Sejin and I discussed the disappointment of seeing Bon Iver live and the overall shit show of the Boston Calling Music Festival, embracing but not bracing your tooth gap, growing up as a weird van gypsy, a serendipitous gas mask, magic showers, and chicken shit bingo, among other things. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. I should put people
on like a
couch.
Chaise, like one of those like therapist chaises.
Full on therapy podcast. I know, I'm unlicensed therapy time with Peter Squire. How's it going?
Good. This is, I've never even listened to a podcast before.
Any podcast?
No, never, ever.
Whoa.
Yep.
My greatest hope is that you listen to this podcast and then it causes you to like listen to all other podcasts.
But then I would be like the Kanye West of podcasts.
What does that mean?
I would just be like, because he said that my greatest regret is that I'll never be able to see myself perform live. He really, that's a direct quote.
Poor thing.
So I feel like then I would, if I were like, my listening to myself talk for an hour makes me want to do that more. That would be horrible.
No. It's a gateway into an undiscovered medium, you know?
That's or, a very I mean, good way to put it.
You also could just start listening to podcasts. You don't have to listen to your own first.
I've kind of been in the room while other people have listened to podcasts.
Okay.
Like my roommate listens to this Dungeons & Dragons podcast.
Okay.
Where it's just like three brothers playing Dungeons & Dragons with each other. And I just hear like laser sounds and like laughter. And then that's it.
That's awesome. I have taken to listening to an also dorky podcast called Hello from the Magic Tavern, which is like an improv comedy podcast set in a like Narnia or Lord of the Rings kind of world.
That's my shit.
You maybe would love it then. It's like, so okay, here's the premise. This guy, Arnie, fell through a dimensional portal behind a Burger King in Chicago and ended up in this land called Foon. And so he hosts a podcast from there with his co-hosts who are a wizard and a shapeshifter.
That sounds amazing.
It's really, really great. I love it. For a while, they kind of like, it seemed like they were running out of things to talk about. So they like threw in, they kind of threw in some plot twists to see if any of them would like make it more interesting, and now they're sort of onto a new one.
Yeah.
Their Foon has been conquered by the Dark Lord now, so they're all living in captivity.
That's pretty abysmal.
I suggest you listen to it.
Yeah.
It's really funny. And I just like, I mean, you listen to the radio, you listen to,
yeah,
you've listened to people talk, you know, so it's like, it's not so different to start
listening.
I have
conversations with friends.
Yeah. So listening to a podcast is like, you know, having a one-sided conversation or like eavesdropping on two friends having a conversation.
Yeah.
that was how I started really getting into it. Was like I was on tour in 2009 and 2010 and just by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, when I got lonely, like listening to music sometimes made it worse. You know, where I would just be like, oh, this song is sad too. And listening to people talk.
Well, that's why you don't make a Sufjan Stevens mixtape and listen to that exclusively.
Damn it. In hindsight. Thank you, Sufjan. No, it was Bon Iver, I think, actually, that made me start listening to podcasts.
I need to tell you a story. Okay. I just went to Boston Calling and saw Bon Iver.
Yeah.
And it was terrible.
Oh.
It was really bad.
He is like, I'm not like a super fan or anything, but like his recordings are like very highly produced. Like he has like double vocals on everything. Like I can see how it wouldn't translate live.
Well, I don't really listen to Bon Iver. I just know like Skinny Love. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And I went with my roommate, the same one who listens to the Dungeons and Dragons podcast. and another friend, and we all went down to Boston Calling just for Friday night, and I was excited about Sigur Rós, and she was really excited about Bon Iver, and Sigur Rós was amazing, and even, like, Bon Iver itself, like, wasn't that bad, but Boston Calling itself was garbage.
Yeah,
like,
I read your Facebook review, but you should share
terrible.
It here.
So we got there, and because of the Manchester bombing that just happened, there was heightened security. So it was 2 hours to get in, which at first I was totally down with because I like safety.
I'm going to be in there.
I want to be safe. We get to the front finally after 2 hours, and it's just like an 18-year-old kid just like glanced at my purse and then waved me in after two. And I was like, is this... That's bullshit. Like, and I had stuff in my purse that you weren't even supposed to bring in there.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Like, I paid to have you catch me with this stuff.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
I did. It was like essential oils and a pocket knife, but like,
yeah, still.
But still, like, those things were not supposed to be allowed in. And after waiting 2 hours, as opposed to like 15 minutes, if it hadn't had that heightened security for nothing, for like an 18-year-old getting paid minimum wage to just be like, cool, go in.
Wow.
And then everyone was so rude. Everyone was littering. There was a Miller Lite tent, and you could go buy Miller Lights, like the tall boy cans, and everyone was drinking them and then just throwing them on the ground. And there were recycling bins everywhere. Like, every three steps, you would just crunch onto a beer can. People were blowing vape smoke in your face. I saw a very unimpressive penis in line at the bathrooms, and his equally unimpressive girlfriend was being horrible. And mud everywhere, which was not their fault, but yeah. It was just the weather. And then Bon Iver went on, and he was singing everything through, like, the Peter Frampton machine.
Oh, my God.
Like, every song. We stayed for, like, five songs, and it was so bad, and the crowd was so terrible that we just decided to go stake out the Sigur Rós stage. And the Sigur Rós set was, I don't know if you listened to them.
I'm not, like, a big fan, but I like them, like, and I definitely get...
Yonsi, the lead singer, was absolutely phenomenal. So awesome. He's 42 or 43 now, and his voice is absolutely phenomenal. He was holding notes for at least a minute.
Wow.
And the whole audience was just like, is this happening?
How is
this
possible?
Incredible. And it was pouring rain, which actually worked for their set because they had a lightning machine that was hooked up to their drum kit. So every time the drummer hit this one drum, lightning, and it would light up through the rain so you could see all the rain.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he just, like, folded himself up into a little Icelandic pretzel and, like, ran around the stage. Just, like, going nuts, playing his guitar with a bow.
Nice.
Like, incredible. But the people were just rude animals. It was so bad. It was not enjoyable at all.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, I'm from New York and I have a lot of, like, anti-Boston bias. But I feel like Boston... at its worst is really terrible.
It was terrible as far as the
culture of a city. And it doesn't help that, like, it's full of colleges and college kids. And, like,
it was like being at a big gross frat party.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah. That's gross. I also have just been reminded, of just how much of a freaking animal you can be in your early 20s, like, without even trying or, like, noticing it.
Yeah.
You're just kind of a maniac. Like, and I'm, like, a fairly responsible and rule-abiding person and always have been. But I'll, like, think back to things that I did in, like, college and right after college where I'm like, oh, my God, like, I was a monster. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I was reminded of this because I have tenants in the house in Elliott who are just, like, they are like, by all accounts, sweet and well-meaning, but, like, they're freaking animals. Like, we went over to the house to, like, check on it, and just, like, the back porch is just literally full of garbage, you know, and there's just, like, these plastic lawn chairs on the front, and it's just like, oh man, like, you guys are just,
well, because the priorities of young 20s are just totally different.
Yeah, I want to hang out on the lawn and not throw out anything. Or, like, I want to make garbage, but I don't want to go to the dump.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, I can totally remember being that way. You know, I don't think that they're bad people. I'm just like, oh yeah, I forgot.
Yeah.
That like when you're young and you're tasting like independence and responsibility for the first time, you're really bad at it.
Yep.
You know, almost everybody.
But they weren't flashing their unimpressive penis at people.
I was only there for a few minutes.
Okay, yes, maybe so they were. Know.
I'll ask the old neighbors. Be like, have you seen anything strange and unimpressive coming from the new from the house?
Unimpressive and flaccid, perhaps.
I mean, in defense, it's hard to have an impressive flaccid penis. You know,
that's true. Just wah, wah, wah.
Some people are showers and some people are growers. You know, it's fine. I've said too much. I'm glad the music was good, at least of the band that
yeah,
you cared
and
about.
Chance the Rapper was there too, cool. And he was great. And I'm just getting into him.
Yeah.
Like I started listening to him when I bought my Boston Calling ticket because I wanted to like have a couple songs under my belt
yeah.
to be able to be like, yeah, I know this song. And he's so charismatic and just like sweet.
Yeah.
And he cried at one point, just like thanking everyone for being there and was like, you guys are my best friends. And he meant it,
that's
even
awesome.
Though we were all strangers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. I haven't heard him yet, but I've obviously heard a lot about
rap.
Him. Yeah.
It's like he plays on this little like, do you know the beginning theme song of Rugrats?
I would if I heard
that
it.
That weird, like, tinkly kind of piano.
Yeah,
he, like
a
plays
toy
on
piano.
That thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a Sesame Street Rugrats kind of deal going on. And he's just, like, super positive. And I feel like a lot of, like, rap and hip-hop right now is very negative.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's so good, but it's also really happy. And it's kind
That's
of
cool.
like, oh, this is something new.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. I feel like the hip-hop that I like to listen to is very, like, hard and coarse, but I don't identify with it at all. Obviously I'm like a white kid from the suburbs, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like,
I mean,
when
like,
I listen to
metal, but I don't really want to like sacrifice virgins or anything. It's just
come
fun
on,
music.
Give it a try.
You
never
could
know.
Like it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. I guess there's escapism in, can be escapism in anything. Yeah. Well, that's cool that it was good, mostly.
Yeah. Well, like,
I mean,
what kind
musically.
Of hip-hop do you listen to?
I like Wu-Tang and, like,
yeah.
you know, just, like,
Little
really...
Dirty Bastard.
Yeah, I just want... I want all rappers to sound like Method Man.
Yeah.
You know, I just, like, love that deep, gravelly voice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I want rap voices to listen to. And I feel like a lot of... I like, am kind of biased against white rappers because I feel like a lot of times they don't want to try to sound black. So they like go in the opposite direction and they go kind of like extra nasally and whiny. And I just,
are you talking specifically about Eminem right now?
No, yeah. I mean him, but also like a lot of others. I haven't heard.
I'm like, are there others? I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not like a huge, like I'm not a depth of knowledge about hip hop, but I really like the first Wu-Tang album and I listen to it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like biased towards that, but I would love to hear more good hip hop and more different hip hop too.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, that's too bad that the festival sucked. I remember when I was young, they had the like Woodstock 2, you know, like Woodstock 25
yeah,
years
yeah.
later. And like, whereas the first one is remembered as this like idyllic peace and love. And then the second one 25 years later was just like a corporate mess.
It was just a dumpster fire.
Yeah. Total shit show. And it's like, maybe it's a generational, we can't have nice things kind of a thing.
Yeah. You know? We ruin everything. Well, I remember talking to some people who went to the first couple Boston Callings, because it's a pretty recent thing. So this was only like maybe 5 or 6 years ago, but it was awesome. It was way smaller. And everyone was like very courteous. And I mean, it's a show, so people are kind of all over the place and like doing whatever they feel like doing, but it wasn't horrible, rude, littering, vape smoke blowing
yeah.
assholes. Like it was a legitimately good experience for a lot of people. So it was disappointing. And I mean, I feel like part of it was they just didn't have the infrastructure to deal with how many people were there.
Yeah.
There were 40,000 people there.
Wow.
In a fairly small space.
Yeah.
So it was just, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe it'll be good next year.
Well, but I think that there probably is a cutoff in terms of size, in terms of like how many people can you have and still maintain
yeah.
a like orderly kind vibe before everyone becomes such a small fraction of the collective that they become anonymous and start acting like monsters.
Yeah. You know? Well, it's like the mob mentality thing.
Yeah.
And like all the food trucks, there were a bunch of food trucks there that I was really excited about, and I got to eat 0% of it because all of them ran out of food like immediately because they just didn't have, they weren't able to deal with many people showed up.
It's weird though for stuff like that, because it's not like it was a free festival and it's like, who knows how many people will be there. Like if it's a ticketed thing, then like, you'd think they'd be ready for like, okay, here's what our turnout's going to be.
Yeah.
But
I don't know what happened.
I can't remember the last time I went to a really huge show. Like I used to go to them growing up. They had the Tibetan Freedom Concert.
I'm not familiar.
Back in the 90s, it was like the Beastie Boys put it on. Yeah. And I got to see Radiohead. And it was like before OK Computer came out. And so it was like, they were still kind of just a rock band.
Yeah.
And I only really
knew
them.
Before they got weird.
Yeah. And I only really knew the song Creep. So I kind of thought of them as like a one-hit wonder. And they were like, oh my fucking God, this band is amazing. And then shortly thereafter, like everyone knew that they were amazing.
Yeah.
But I was just like, wow, I had no idea.
I'm very jealous. Yeah. Radiohead is one of my all-time favorite bands.
Yeah,
and I've wanted to see them live so badly for so long.
Yeah. I mean, they still play though, don't they?
Yeah, they just played at Madison Square Garden last year that I was thinking about going, and then I was just like broke as a joke at the time, so I wasn't able to get there. But Tom York's just like beautiful haggard angel.
Yeah. But I mean, recently I only really go to local shows, and like the biggest venue I've seen a show at in the last bunch of years is probably like the State Theater in Portland.
Yeah. I just saw Sufjan Stevens there last year.
Oh, how was it?
I mean, he's amazing.
Yeah.
So it was great. He made a bunch of jokes about lobster rolls that weren't actually jokes, but we all laughed anyway.
He gets us.
Yeah.
I got to see him when I lived in Brooklyn. I worked at this theater called BAM, the Brooklyn Academy of Music, and they used to like sometimes like commission pieces from artists.
Mm-hmm.
And they commissioned him to do this thing called the BQE, which is the Brooklyn Queens Expressway.
Yeah.
And he kind of made like he was kind of the idea of him doing the like 50 states thing was still alive.
That was a pipe dream.
Yeah. It was a cool pipe dream, but that's
he
a
got
lot
a couple
of albums.
Of them out.
Yeah. So this, I guess, was sort of a play on that where it was just kind of about New York City, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like a film, which was mostly time-lapse photography of like cars on the BQE. And then there was like a like dance-ish performance hula hoops thing going on the stage with music like performed live by him and his band. And it was pretty cool. It was only like 15 or 20 minutes. And then he played a like an actual concert.
Yeah.
And yeah, totally amazing.
Well, he's like a weird, cool person. So I feel like he's totally down to do stuff like that.
Yeah. So yeah, sure.
I saw him twice. I saw him the first time in Ithaca, New York. I went to school in Rochester, New York, and me and my best friend in college, he is like absolutely obsessed with Sufjan, somehow got tickets to the show at a bar at Castaways in Ithaca, New York, and there were 50 of us in Sufjan.
Wow.
And it was incredible. And we both have gaps in our teeth, and we all got to meet him after, and he was like, oh, you have a gap. That's beautiful. And I just started crying and like handed him my shoe to sign. Like, please.
Will you sign my gap?
Yeah,
right. That's awesome. That's such a cool like thing to connect about.
I love him. Yeah. Well, not very many people have gaps anymore. Everyone has braces and, I can't remember what the scientific word for having a gap in your front teeth is. There's a word for it.
Do you feel like a sense of pride and community about
it? Yeah, I do. Whenever I see people, I'm like, hey, yeah.
We kept
sisters.
It.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I had braces for a bunch of years, but I told them to keep my gap.
That's
and then
awesome.
Just fix the rest of my horrible goblin teeth.
How old were you when you made that decision?
I got braces when I was 9 and I had them until I was 14.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you, but even at age 9, you were like, I'm proud of my gap.
Yeah. I wanted to keep it.
That's awesome.
Well, it's like everyone in my family has one too. So I wanted
it's like your family crest.
Yeah, exactly.
Should be like two towers with nothing in between.
Like,
yeah.
Like weird Irish people. And there we go.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I like the idea of like people taking pride in like whatever makes them funky, you know,
yeah.
Whatever makes them unique or different.
Our culture is so about like conforming at this point, and like you gotta have this hair color and you have to wear these clothes and go cut up your face a whole bunch so you can look like this person.
Totally.
And I'm like, everyone just be weird.
Yeah.
Just be weird.
Yeah.
That's the best.
I actually remember the dentist telling me I didn't need braces and my reaction being like, but all my friends have them. Like, aren't I supposed to get them? Like, won't I be weird if I don't?
And
my mom was
like, the different colored rubber bands for the different holidays.
And my mom's like, that would be a very expensive thing to do just to impress your friends. No, like,
trust
me. You
didn't end up getting them?
No.
You have nice teeth.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't need braces.
Yeah. Fuck you.
I have gaps in, like, funny places, which are now pretty much just, like, meat catchers, you know? So it's like,
I think, maybe it's just because I have jacked up teeth, but I think having jacked up teeth is, like, I'm very attracted to people who have, like, snaggle teeth or, like, a gap or, like, when all the bottom teeth are crooked. Like, I'm instantly more attracted to you if you have that.
Do you think it's, like, these are my people? Like, I wonder if it's a deep-seated thing.
I think, like, maybe it's subconsciously that, but I think it's just, like, it's because it makes you different.
Hmm.
So I'm just like, ooh, different. Cool. And especially people who own it.
Huh.
I'm like, yeah, own your weird.
It'd be funny, people just, like, walking around with their jaw jutted out, like, showing off their janky bottom
just, like,
teeth.
A Japanese chin. Just like,
check me out.
I have a friend with two Japanese chins, and they look like that, so.
Nice. Oh, I thought you meant, like, a Japanese person's chin. And
no,
I was
no,
like,
no,
do they have
like
weird
the
chins?
Breed of dog. No, I was just inadvertently racist. No, you were racist.
No, I was.
You put your
totally.
Racism on me. No.
my racist lack of dog breed knowledge.
Racist against dogs.
Yeah, totally. They're the worst. Did you grow up around here?
I did. Well, I was born in Newburyport, which is basically Massachusetts Portsmouth.
Yeah.
And then moved out to Arizona. I lived in Arizona until I was 7. And I miss that. I miss the desert. We were in Tempe, which is right outside of Phoenix. Like, if you go into Phoenix and just drive into the desert, that's Tempe.
Why did you move there?
So I have a weird family. Hi mom. So my mom is, like me if I were way more weird.
Okay.
But we have the same personality, but just like different life experiences. She's way cooler than I will ever be in my whole life. So she had me and then she met my brother's father and had my brother and she decided that we were gonna, buy a van and live out of the van and
nice.
Just drive all over America. So we were just like weird van gypsies.
Whoa.
For a while. And those are like my first memories are like living in that van and just like stopping at like gas stations and seeing these like crazy huge sunsets. And, we ended up settling out in Tempe and we stayed there, for a bunch of the time. I hear Wesley.
Yep.
That's Wesley.
That's the background noise.
So I lived out there and I absolutely loved it. Like the desert is my place. Like I'm definitely like a hot blooded person. I need to be out there. I'm very cold out here every winter. I'm like, why do I live here? Oh yeah. Cause all of my friends and family live here.
So
everything
when did you move
I know
back?
When I was 7. So
how long were you van lifing and how long were you in Tempe?
I'm not 100% sure. Van lifing for a couple years.
Wow.
Yeah. And then Tempe. We van lifed down to Florida and we stayed there for a little while and then van lifed over to like the West Coast and then stayed in Tempe for a while.
Wow.
And then came back here and kind of lived in different spots on the seacoast for a while. And I stayed around here until I went to college and I went to college up in upstate New York.
Wow.
And then came back.
So what do you remember from that? Cause that's pretty unusual.
One of my first memories is my mom taking us out into the desert when it was this crazy, crazy thunderstorm. And by out into the desert, I mean like 100 yards from our house.
Right.
And it was this insane thunderstorm, and we both put on our bathing suits. And it was like we couldn't breathe because of how much rain there was. Like it was like swimming. So we just went out into the desert.
Like monsoon season.
Yeah, and just like ran through the desert. And I was probably 3 or 4. It was one of my first memories. It's just like being in my bathing suit and like being in the desert, but like not being able to, like drowning in the air.
That's
because
crazy.
Of the crazy rain. And then there was a tarantula on our porch. There's actually a picture of it somewhere in one of my photo albums. Huge tarantula crawled onto the porch, and my mom and I were terrified, and my brother's father picked it up with a shovel and was just like brandishing it at us. Like it was funny. Like, put it down.
Do tarantulas have webs?
Some of them do. Some of like the tunnel spiders do. Sometimes they just like live under rocks and stuff.
I'm just like imagining like the web that would emerge from a tarantula would be like a ball of yarn or something.
Pretty much. Yeah. But like the tunneling ones, I don't know if they're technically tarantulas, but they look like tarantulas.
Yeah.
Like they're giant and hairy, and Jesus. And they like have these crazy, like they create tunnels underground that they like create the webs like around the tunnels, so anything that crawls into the tunnel gets stuck in the web, and it's really thick. Like it's that stuff that they make like Kevlar out of or whatever.
Jesus.
You know how they can like make stuff out of the spider silk now. But yeah, the desert environment was awesome. I mean, it kind of wants to kill you. Like my mom had to go to the hospital one day because she put her shoes on without looking and there was a scorpion. Yeah. But then we came back here after my brother and I had fully acclimated to the desert climate.
They're like, okay, you're
let's
ready.
Come back
let's
to
go
New
to the
England
ocean. Yeah.
Now. Yeah, so I'm still, like, even this weather, I'm cold. I don't like this.
So why did they make the decision to come back, and why did you stay?
So we came back. So my father was still in the picture. We came back because, my dad was diagnosed with cancer when I was really, really little, and, they thought he wasn't going to make it. And he almost died when I was 4 and then inexplicably recovered.
Wow.
So like we kind of went out there and he stayed back here and was getting his treatments and stuff, and he got better. And, my mom was kind of like, I don't know what's happening with my life right now. So he was like, just come back and like, I'll take care of Sage and too. And, so we came back and I went and stayed with my dad. And then I ended up sticking around. I thought I was going to leave after high school. I went through a familiar rough patch and didn't really like talk to the rest of my family for a couple years. My dad passed away when I was 12. And then like we went through a rough patch and, ended up not really speaking to them for a couple years. And so I was like, after college, I'm just gonna do whatever. I'm just gonna go crazy and like move all over the place. And then I met Jeff Bernhardt and then I stayed here.
Wow.
Yep. And now I'm just like, everyone I know and love is here. And like, whenever I like leave my house and go walk around Dover or Portsmouth, Newmarket, like I see 10 people I know and I love everybody. And I have a great job. I work at White Heron as a coffee roaster / barista, and we're all good friends there. And I'm like, when am I going to find something like this?
Yeah.
But this winter was really rough on me, and I'm actually thinking about moving to Austin, Texas.
Whoa. I lived in Austin after college.
You did?
Yeah.
Did you love it?
I did.
I don't know anyone who was like, fuck Austin, Texas. Everyone loves it.
Well, here's who's fuck Austin, Texas, is the people who've lived there for their whole lives and have watched it blow up.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, they're the same as the people who've lived in Portsmouth their whole lives and have watched it change. You know, it's just like the way the like urban gentrification is the same everywhere. And like the complaints are the same everywhere about development. I don't know how much it costs to live there.
It's comparable to like Portsmouth area.
Is it?
Yeah. Which is pretty expensive, but like I'm used to it. So
when I moved there, it was 2003. Late 2003. And we got a 3-bedroom apartment for $900 a month.
Oh my
and
God.
It was like, we thought of it as totally nice, but I'm sure it was a dump because we had just graduated college and we were
still
like monsters. It was like right on the other side of the river from downtown, which is like, it's funny. I went back and visited several years later with Anne, and I like wanted to go back to all my favorite places. And I went there and I was like, oh my God, they're all dumps. Like they've all gone down the drain. And I was like, no, I was basically still in college and like they were probably all loaded with college kids then, and I just thought it was normal. But when you go back when you're 30, you're like, ew.
Yeah.
You know?
Terrible. So
I probably, like, the fact that it was right near downtown at the time I saw as a bonus, but if I were to go back now, I probably wouldn't want to live in that same area.
How long were you there?
Just under a year. It was just like that first year after college. And then I came back. I think I was there from like November till May. So like 6 months.
But that's like the winter time. So it was so nice probably.
It was, it was pretty much like fall here.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of rainy. And then when I would tell people how much I loved Austin, they'd be like, when did you live there? And I would say November to May. And they were like, oh, well, you missed the summer. Like, that's why you loved it. You know, it'd be like only being on the seacoast from like May till November, pretty much, you know, and then you skip the whole shitty winter.
Mm-hmm. But I'm fine with heat.
Yeah.
I grew up in Arizona, so I feel like I can do it.
I remember very distinctly there were still video stores, and the video store still had VHS tapes. And there was this mangled VHS tape, like, attached to the wall. And it was, like, there was, like, a sign under it that said, like, someone left this in their car with the windows rolled up for 10 minutes in August, you know?
So, and it just, like, exploded.
It was just, like, it had
just
bent a million different shapes. Yeah, probably liquefied.
Yeah. Absolutely not.
So don't leave your VHS tapes in the car if you go.
I'll make sure not to. Though cassette tapes are coming back.
Totally.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Do you remember, like, so I'm a lot younger than you. I was born in 1990.
Yeah. So you know, you're 20, what
20,
are you?
27.
Okay.
So I was conceived in the 80s, which is what counts. I was made out of 80s loving. Yep. I just missed the 80s. I was born in February of 1990. But I remember, like, as a kid walking around, even in the early 2000s, there were just like tumbleweeds of magnetic tape.
Yeah.
Just like everywhere, like on the side of the roads, just like balls of it.
Yep.
Everywhere. And I hope that comes back. I miss that.
I always loved cassette tapes. And like, there's these sort of like simultaneous feelings about the reemergence of cassettes. One is like, I always liked them. So cool.
It's nostalgic.
Yeah. But also, like, why are they coming back? Like,
is it because of how cheap they are?
Yeah, I think so. And especially because, like, vinyl came back. I feel like for practical reasons, vinyl came back. It's like, it actually sounds different and it looks different to, like, hold a record and stuff like that. But, like, it's like the most undigital format,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's an actual physical thing that has grooves stamped into it to make it play. So it like makes sense that it came back as a reaction to, you know, MP3s, but they're expensive to make.
They're
really expensive. Like, you can't just like, I mean, you can, I'm sure, just like DIY make records, but you know, it takes a lot. So tapes are just like super easy and cheap, but it's like, who still has tape players?
Well, they have new little ones that they just go in that part where you would like stick the pencil to rewind it.
Yeah.
Just like one of those, and you clip it onto your belt. So it's really, it's like the size of an iPod shuffle.
That's awesome.
But like, is the quality even good? I haven't listened to a tape in like 15 years.
I think that it's like, it's lo-fi, you know, and maybe that's the appeal of it.
Yeah.
And that sometimes they get kind of warped and it gets that weird warble, and maybe, I don't know if it's just a nostalgic attachment or if there is some sort of like, you can't capture that sound in other ways.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I definitely still have tapes that are like unplayable at this point that I just keep out of nostalgia.
Yeah.
You know,
like music tapes, not VHS.
Yeah. Like, this is just a relic. I also still have VHS tapes, but
I definitely still have VHS. Oh, I'm looking at them right now.
Yeah.
Sonic Youth.
Yep. 1991, the year punk broke. yeah. So how serious is the Austin move consideration?
When I went to college, I got into swing dancing.
Okay.
So I'm a Lindy Hopper.
Okay.
And I was very, very into that when I was in college. And last summer I went back up to Rochester. Two of like the pillars of the Lindy community there got married.
Nice.
And so I went back to their Lindy wedding. And it was a 3-day long wedding.
Whoa.
And it was insane. And we just danced our pants off, and I hadn't danced in a couple years. So I was really like kind of nervous going back into it with all my friends who have been continuing to dance, and I was very, and I got that special kind of drunk where you're extra good at things. It's a very fine line, and I hit it right on the mark. And everyone was like, oh, where have you been dancing? And I'm like, this is the first time I've danced in 3 years. And they were like, no. Like, I'm that special kind of drunk.
Right on the edge of the knife.
Yep, a very special drunk. But it was so nice to dance again, and I miss it so much. And there's not really anything like that around here. And Austin, Texas has the second biggest swing scene in the country. And I'm actually friends with a bunch of the swing dancers down there because the swing dance community is big on like workshops and conferences all the time. So we're constantly putting each other up and visiting and traveling. And so I've met a bunch of the Austin dancers. So I would have that kind of base to be like, hey, like what are the good neighborhoods to live in? Like,
yeah.
Where could I find a good job? And then obviously being part of the swing community again would be awesome.
Wow.
I miss it a lot.
So you're like actively pursuing it, or are you just kind of like juggling it in your head?
I have not started actively pursuing it yet. I just signed a year lease 2 months ago.
Oh, okay.
But I've touched base with some of the Austin guys, told them I'm thinking about it. I would like to go out to visit, and see how that works out. I'm very seriously considering it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I've got so much going on around here that I love. Like I work with Michael Winters all the time. And though my band Vespers kind of been on hiatus for a year and a half. So, cause John Lessard and he's a businessman now. He got married to Tiffany. She's wonderful. And they have a great business, Lost Coast over in Kittery. And that takes up like all their time.
Because
when they're not physically in the shop, they're out like curating the stuff that they have in their
shop. Acquiring the stuff.
Yeah. And he just did jury duty, which is butts. Yeah.
Jesus.
So they just haven't had any time. But if you're listening, Johnny, when you want to get back into it, I'm right there.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You could start a whole like Vespers 2.
Vespers 2.
Be like one of those things where like there's one member from the original band left, but they still call it the Temptations.
Well,
or
it was only two of us. We were a duo. So
sorry, John, you're out.
Finding a new person. Bye.
Shmonathan.
No, it wouldn't be the same without him because I didn't actually write any of the music. He wrote all the music. He's an amazing songwriter. Even before we got together, to make this band, like he was in a band when I first moved to Portsmouth and I was, dating Jeff, he and John and Zach Tremblay were in a band, Ellen Page, band, not the actress. And they're my favorite band. I went to every single one of their shows, not just cause I was dating the drummer because they rocked. And like Johnny wrote all that music and he is an absolutely phenomenal songwriter. And I wanted to work with him for years. And so when he approached me to work on Vesper, I was just completely stoked. So basically like he wrote all the music and then I would sing a lot of it and he would like do harmonies and guitar. And then I would like zhuzh it up a little bit. I would zhuzh it. I would just like kind of like rewrite the melodies and add some harmonies and stuff like that.
Well, and you have like a traditional like singing background, right? Like,
yeah, I'm a classically trained opera singer.
so that's a thing I'll just throw in there.
Yep, that's what I went to college for.
Wow.
Yeah. And I didn't do anything with it for a really long time. And then just last summer I joined a professional choir. So I've been doing that.
Wow.
Which is fun. So I'm actually like using all that training, my 5 years of training.
Wow. What's the choir?
Amare Cantare.
Is that the group that just did Carmina Burana?
No. No, there's a bunch of professional choirs in this area, actually, which is awesome. There's like Portsmouth Pro Musica and like Women in Harmony and things like that. Amare Cantare, we just did, we were just a part of this big Beethoven's Ninth thing that the Portsmouth Symphony Orchestra was a part of. And then that was like a big kind of community thing. So it was us, Portsmouth Pro Musica, St. John's Church Choir, and Portsmouth Symphony Orchestra. And then we had our kind of like semesterly concert and we did Hindemith's Six Chansons, which is beautiful French song cycle, as well as a bunch of other music. It was all like nature oriented. So our director, Kitty, is the one who chooses the music every semester. And she is so talented with that of just like curating all this beautiful music. And we did some stuff that was based off of poetry by like Emily Dickinson and Henry David Thoreau. And it was really, really beautiful spring kind of themed concert. That was nice. And it's nice to be singing that kind of music again, because for a long time I was just kind of like bopping around being in bands, which I love. It's totally different thing.
It's a different itch to scratch.
Yeah. So it's nice to be singing in like foreign languages and having to like utilize all the technical things that I worked on for so long and then just kind of like let go.
Yeah. So it sounds like in terms of that and the Lindy Hop, you're having kind of a return to past loves kind of.
Yeah. I kind of like let some stuff go and I got some new stuff too, but like I'm looking back and being like, wow, I really had a good time with that stuff and I want to get back into it. But I'm sure like if I do move or like, even if it's not to Austin, somewhere else, I'll look back at Portsmouth and be like, wow, those things that I did, I should do those again too.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny how, leaving makes you appreciate the things that you left.
Absolutely.
A lot. You know, we just got back from traveling and like,
yeah, your belated honeymoon.
Yeah. And it was like,
congratulations again, by the way.
Thank you. It really made me appreciate this area, like seeing all different kinds of places that all have their own real strengths and weaknesses to come to here and be like, yeah, this place is exceptional in all of these ways. Like not just like for the Northeast or anything. It's like for the world. Like mm-hmm. this is a beautiful, wonderful place, and like it's not perfect at all, but neither is anywhere.
How long were you gone?
3 months.
3 months.
Yeah.
And you went everywhere.
Yeah. We saw a shitload of places and then like came back and weren't just like blah, boring America. It was like, oh, these are the things that are great about here too. Mm-hmm. You know, and like being able to put it into that context of like every place is amazing and terrible. And yeah. So is home, you know? Yep.
What was your favorite place that you visited? I mean, I'm sure that that's just like apples and oranges.
Yeah, there were apples and oranges, and like almost everywhere we went, we loved something about it.
Yeah.
Or we like had an incredible, beautiful day almost everywhere we went. But the place that stood out that we always like keep talking about how great it was Budapest.
Yeah.
We really loved Budapest. Someone sent me a Facebook message today asking for tips about Lisbon. And I was just like, ooh, Lisbon's so great. And it just like sent me right back there. And I was like looking at the metro map again to see if I could remember like which stops the good stuff was close to. And it's nice to have those prompts of like the things that I liked about each of the places that we went.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, I mean,
you went like all over Asia too, didn't you?
No, just Thailand.
Thailand.
But we were in like southern Thailand for a little while, and then Bangkok for a few days, and then northern Thailand. So we got to see kind of like a few different parts of the same country, and then we went to Egypt, which is not in Asia; it's in Africa.
That's true.
But got a taste of kind of like, well, I don't know if it's representative of Middle Eastern culture, but it's Egyptian culture is like its own thing. It's like this gateway between, I guess part of Egypt is in Asia. The Sinai Peninsula is like actually attached to the rest of the Middle East.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it is on the continent of Africa. And Egypt was totally its own crazy experience.
Yeah. Well, it has all this like incredible ancient culture, but then currently like politically, it's just like on fire.
Totally.
So.
And it doesn't seem like the people who live in Egypt now, or even for the past like several thousand years, like they don't really give a shit about the ancient culture there, except that the tourists care about it. And they're like, oh, well, they're coming here with money to look at that old shit. So like, we'd better make it easy for them to do that. You know? But yeah, it was totally, that was the place that we went that felt the most like, I can't believe we're on the same planet right now.
Yeah.
You know, like this couldn't be more different from our life. But it was so awesome. And then you come back home and you're like, oh yeah. Like for one thing, like it's great to get to sleep in your own bed and see your friends. Like when you travel for a long time, it's like, oh yeah, friends. What are those? Yeah. You know,
did you guys stay in hostels or were you mostly
in
Airbnbs? Airbnbs.
Which was great. It was perfect for
hostels
us.
Hostels are a crapshoot.
Yeah, and I think I'm just a little too old.
What, like, you don't want a bunch of, like, French dudes to talk about you while their underwear's all over your bed?
This sounds like it comes from experience.
That's just everywhere. That's just, but also, when I went to Germany a few years ago, and I got in at, like, whatever o'clock in the morning after traveling for 20 hours, and I found this amazing rate on this hostel. It was a pretty nice hostel. Like, yeah, they had a lot of amenities and, like,
where
free Wi-Fi
in Germany
and stuff.
Was it?
I was in Berlin.
Yeah.
And it was in Prenzlauer Berg. And I got there at, like, whatever o'clock in the morning, totally jet lagged. I had never traveled before. So I was just, like, trying to find my footing. And it was very, very cheap. I bought it, like, online before I went there. And it was $3 a night.
Whoa.
And I bought 2 weeks. I bought 2 weeks worth. And I was like, okay, $3 a night, I can do this. But the catch was, you share a room with five other people. So there's three bunk beds in the room. And I get there, and it's just all these French boys. They're like 19, 20 year olds. All these French boys, and they're all in Speedos or, like, their normal underwear, I guess. And they have all of their clothes all over all the beds, including mine, and, like, wet towels.
Ugh.
And I walked in and I was like, excuse me, my bed. And they were like, oh, no, je ne parle pas français. And I'm like, I speak fairly decent French. So I started speaking French with them, and they just, like, shit their pants. Like, they were like, oh, no, now we can't talk shit about this girl. She's in the room with us. But yeah, so that, hostels.
Yeah. Berlin, I gotta say, was the only place we didn't love.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I loved Berlin.
I've only ever heard people love Berlin. And
what
I think
happened?
It nothing happened. It wasn't like, we didn't hate it. I think it was maybe just like a combination.
Just nothing great happened.
It was a combination of like the time of the trip where like we had had a stretch of like cold, rainy, gray Eastern Europe, and it was just sort of like, okay, like we've had enough of the sort of like gray, like actual like climate gray coldness, and also like a little bit of like historic gray coldness.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, like it's been a little heavy, like sort of, cause it was awesome to like learn about the history of the places where we were, but also like the Soviets had quite an impact, and like, not to mention the Nazis, you know? So it's just like all of these places after a little while, it was like, okay, like you guys have been through a lot.
You know,
and it just, I guess there was just this vibe of kind of like heaviness, and we were maybe like a little extra sensitive to it.
Yeah.
Cause we were just like, it was after we were in Greece, which was just so like warm and loving and kind. And then we loved Budapest, but then I think like after like a few other cities like that, where it was like cold and gray and rainy and sort of like lingering in its post-Sovietness, we were like, okay, this is like
lingering,
this is starting to weigh on us a little bit, you know. And we were also like staying with a friend, which was great to stay with a friend and to like see a friend, but we had just a little less independence to go where we wanted to and do what we wanted to and like come and go as we pleased, because, you know, we were
trying to be,
he was
guests,
being really nice, yeah, and letting us stay there. So it was like, okay, well, when do you want us to be there? And only one person could have a key and all that stuff, you know? So,
yeah. Cause so Berlin's then, only fun if you go out at night,
which we also don't really do.
Yeah. And it's like night,
yeah,
not like America night.
No, it was like when we would go to a restaurant for dinner at like 6 or 7, they were like, what
That's
are you
lunchtime.
Doing here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't go to the club until 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right. And he's a DJ, so he would like,
it's crazy.
That was his life. This seems like a bad combination of things. He's a DJ and owns a coffee shop. So he would literally like wake up at 10 o'clock at night to go to the show. And then after the show, go to work,
yeah,
you know,
that's normal over there. Like,
yeah.
People who have 9-to-5s, they come home, they go to sleep.
Right.
And then they wake up again. They take like a 4-hour nap, and then they wake up, and then they go out and like, I've never experienced anything like that.
Yeah,
in
and
my
I think
life.
That we're just so not that way lifestyle wise that we couldn't participate in that or chose not to.
Yeah.
And then therefore didn't see the things time. About the city that everyone else loves.
Yeah, their club life is insane. There's nothing like partying all night and then at 10 o'clock in the morning on a weekday, leaving the club and stumbling over to the donor place on the corner and just trying to order in broken German to a Turkish man who also speaks broken German.
Right, totally.
Yeah. Which is fun. Yeah. So I'm sorry you guys didn't have
best time. It was just like relative to the other places we were. And like, it totally makes sense that the things that people love about being there just kind of aren't our kinds of things.
Yeah. You know? They do have awesome museums, like the Neue Museum.
And yeah. We went to the, damn it, what's it called? I don't remember the name of it right now, but we saw the Ishtar's Gate from like ancient Assyria. Like,
I think that might be at the Neue Museum.
Pergamon. It was the Pergamon.
Yeah, that's Cleopatra. No, Nefertiti. No, one of those like female important figures that I don't know because I'm a stupid American. at the Neue Museum was great.
Yeah, and they have that whole museum island.
Yeah,
you know where you can. And so we talked about going back and spending more time there, and we didn't. So I think that there's definitely a version of Berlin that we could have had a better time in. It just sort of didn't work out that way.
Yeah.
You know, but it wasn't like terrible or anything. It was just like relative to the other places we went and absolutely loved. It was like,
wasn't your thing. And then the time of year is
totally
dreary.
Yeah. It was
March. Beautiful because it's like New England.
Yes.
They have very similar weather where it gets like really nice and hot in the summertime and then they have pretty intense winters.
Yeah. So it was, and I feel bad, like, shit talking it, you know, because it's like our friend was so nice to put us up and be like, yeah, this was our least favorite place we went.
You
know what
I mean? Fuck you and your hospitality.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was still cool, and I'm really glad we went there. Like, in hindsight, I wouldn't really change anything about it. I think that it was hard to figure out the balance between, like, am I happy today because of where we are, or am I just having a good day? You know, when you're like, not just like on vacation for a week, but you're like, my life right now is traveling. Then how do I distinguish between my feelings about the place where I am and just like my feelings in general, you know? So yeah, it'll be interesting for you, I think, to see like after living for almost your whole life in one area to like,
yeah, my
to
whole
have,
like
to
adult
have a
life.
Jarring change of scenery.
Yeah.
You know, and what are the things that you miss and what are the things that you are glad to be rid of?
Yeah. I mean, it's not even like I want to be rid of anything in particular other than the weather.
Yeah.
It's just like I have lived here pretty much my whole life and it seems like a really amazing spot, like social wise. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I have that base of like friends that are already there and I miss swing dancing and they have an amazing music scene. They
You're
have
gonna
a great
get into
restaurant
country music.
Scene. I don't like country music.
I did not like country music before I lived in Austin.
I don't believe you.
Listen, I'm from New York. Like I did not have country music in my life at all. And then I saw like live
like,
honky tonk bands.
Qualify country music though.
Like, all right.
Because I like Johnny
about
Cash.
Yeah,
and
So
I'm down with that kind of stuff. I don't like the pop country.
No, me either. I grew an intense affection for Willie Nelson down there.
Okay.
And like seeing like live honky tonk bands where it's just like a guitar, bass, drums, and like a pedal steel. It was like, oh, these guys are shredding right now.
I could get down with that kind of stuff.
And like, I think that there's probably not that big of a disconnect from like a Lindy Hop dance scene to like a country dancing scene.
There are some similarities, especially with like the group dances, like kind of like the circle and line dances that are done. Similar.
I will give you one recommendation if you're willing to deal with some live honky tonk music.
Yes.
There is a bar there called Ginny's Little Longhorn Saloon. And every Sunday afternoon, they have an event called Chicken Shit Bingo, where they put basically a grid of numbers on top
of
a pool table.
Chickens.
And they put a chicken on it.
Oh my God.
And if the chicken shits on your number, you win.
That's amazing. Yeah. Why don't we have that here?
I know. Well, we talked about getting chickens to deal with the ticks. And I was like, if we get chickens, I'm spray painting a grid of numbers on our lawn and we will have chicken shit bingo every day.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So instead of like the tumbler full of numbers, you just have a chicken wander around.
And probably one of the best moments of my whole life was hearing this loud, drunk Texan guy who the chicken was standing right near his number screaming at it, "Rotate! Rotate!"
That's amazing.
Yeah, I will never forget that.
I feel like I would like to see a drunk, loud Texan man screaming at a chicken.
To turn around and shit on my number.
Yep.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I'm excited at least to go visit. My mom lived out there. My mom was a construction worker out there for a couple years before I was born, and she absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
And like my mom grew up in Boston and she lived out in, Brooklyn for a little while, but really hadn't been anywhere other than the East Coast. And then she went out there. And this is the '70s too. And she's a Boston girl from the, she's got a very thick Boston accent.
Nice.
Tet, her name's Tet. So she went out there with her friend Marie and she was like, I went to this like swimming hole, like Marie
Barton
had been
Springs.
Out there. I think it was Barton Springs. It's like a rock quarry kind of deal. Yeah. She went out to Barton Springs and she was like, it was this crazy rock quarry. It was beautiful. And everyone was topless and doing yoga. And she had never seen anyone do yoga before.
Yeah.
Like she had heard the word and like kind of knew what it was, but she like lands in Texas and all of a sudden all these topless women doing yoga in this like huge, beautiful rock quarry. And she was like, I like this.
Yeah.
This is great.
I wonder how it came to be this like progressive oasis in the middle of Texas of all places, you know?
Yeah. Like, it's like a little island of sanity.
Yeah.
In just kind of a shit state. Yeah.
I always said that in my experience there, it had all of the good cultural things about Texas without most of the bad cultural things about Texas.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, you get to eat barbecue and like listen to good live country music, but like the people around you are like smart and progressive and artistic and interesting. You
yeah.
know? So
it's just like a bunch of like tattooed heathens. In Texas.
Tattooed heathens and cowboy hats.
Yeah, exactly.
I really liked it there. I can see you liking it there.
Yeah. I'd be excited at least just to go visit because I heard the food is great. Like, great restaurant scene. My friends, you know Chelsea and Chris Drapo?
No.
Chelsea works at Jessica Todd. She does all my hair for the Michael Winter shoots.
Oh, cool.
And her husband, Chris, is a pretty famous metal musician.
Okay.
He was in Thy Will Be Done for a long time. And then he just did a bunch of touring in Japan with this band called Aggressive Dogs.
Okay.
And they actually they're moving to New York City like tomorrow.
Wow.
I miss them. But they went to Austin recently, like maybe last summer, and had the best time. And they said they went to a pizza shop that was a heavy metal pizza shop.
Okay.
And like all the pizzas were named after metal bands and like metal songs. And like they walked by and they were like, what is this like kitschy, awful thing? And they walked in and they were like, no, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's lots of stuff like that. Just like weird artistic people being like, I'm going to open a heavy metal pizza shop. And like, fuck it if no one comes. And then people come.
Yeah,
and
the pizza's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Metal's
That's
good
awesome.
And pizza's good.
That was actually, I missed. There was not good pizza in my experience in Austin, but I'm sure that it's changed.
But then
it seems like it's grown a lot. Mexican food
and
is bomb.
Obviously the barbecue.
Yeah. As long as you are a meat eater, there is a lot for you.
I am
Austin.
A meat eater.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ooh, the salt lick. Mm.
The salt lick?
I mean, yeah, I've heard that Franklin barbecue is better, but you have to get in line at like 10 a.m.
Depending on the quality of the barbecue, I'd wait around for barbecue.
I've heard it's unbelievable. I've never had it. But the Salt Lick is like 20 minutes outside of Austin, and it's just like, I don't know what to say. It's so freaking good.
It's
like
mind-blowing.
Sent me into a fugue state. Yeah. That's cool. So how did you, so the two things that you mentioned that I want to know more about is like becoming a coffee roaster at White Heron and then also like the Michael Winter stuff. Like how does that start and what is it like to be?
So coffee first.
Okay.
So they actually happened kind of simultaneously to each other. I went to Europe. I went to Germany. I spent all my money. I was there for 2 months. And I came back with like $17 in my bank account. Yeah. And then like crashed on my mom's couch. And so I just like needed a job really bad. And I ended up getting a job at like the juicery just because I needed something. And it was terrible because it's the juicery. And John Lessard worked at White Heron. And I was asking people around, like, is, you know, if anyone's hiring? And he was like, you should come into White Heron, give an application. And they hired me as a barista because I had barista experience. I worked at Cafe Killam for 2 years. All right. So I started working there as a barista. And I'm really into, like, I really like machinery a lot. Like, my brother's a mechanic, and, like, I've always liked to take things apart and put them back together. And so I made friends with the coffee roaster there, Dave, the old coffee roaster. And he would, like, take me back into the room and show me how everything worked. And, like, he would let me, like, help him clean the machine and stuff. And then his apprentice, this girl named Molly, ended up leaving to take a different job. And he asked me if I wanted to apprentice for him. And I said, fuck yes.
Yeah.
And I apprenticed under him for about a year. And then he moved down south to be close to some of his family. And I thought that they were going to look for someone else to be the head roaster because I didn't have a whole lot of experience. But Dave gave me a glowing recommendation. And so they asked me to take over as the head roaster. And I took John Lessard as my new apprentice.
Whoa.
And yeah, I've been there for pretty much since they opened. I started working there a month after they opened. So it'll be 4 years in October.
Wow.
That I'll have been there and roasting for 3 years now.
Wow. Yep. That's crazy. Time really flies.
I know, right?
I feel like they haven't, I don't remember them being open that long. But then
it'll be 4 years in September.
Wow.
Yeah. That they've been open. But yeah, it's a really, really great place to work. All of our coffees are organic. And I order through a place that takes a lot of pride in working with farmers who wouldn't otherwise be able to get a good rate for their coffee. And we get it from all over the world, like Colombia, Nicaragua, Guatemala, Africa. Like we just had a good Rwandan coffee that was amazing. And then my personal favorites, the Indonesian coffees, like from Bali and Java. Really, really delicious. So I have a lot of leeway. They give me a lot of like creative license. So I order whatever coffees I want. I roast them however I want to roast them. So I've done a lot of research and kind of I've changed the way that we have roasted coffee. Like I roast different than Dave taught me. Because I've kind of like, I've read a lot of books and read a lot of articles and kind of created my own way of roasting. And I have two apprentices right now. I have Clark, who's also our delivery guy, and a new guy that just started last month, Britton, and he just got back from Australia and he roasted out in Australia for a while too. So he wanted to come on to see, like, because everyone roasts different. So he wanted some new stuff. But I'm still a barista there too. And I love that because we're all just like, I mean, we work really hard, but we also kind of just like shoot the shit, and we're all like really, really friendly with each other and
the
hang out outside of work.
Happy,
we're so happy.
Yeah.
We
it
all
makes
love
such
each
a
other.
Difference for the customers at a business when the people who work there
are legitimately happy,
are enjoying themselves and getting work done. You know, because there's like businesses where the people are enjoying themselves and not taking care of you. And you're like, okay, like have a little less fun, please.
Yeah.
You know, but like when you're like being served well and the people seem happy, it just like it affects everything about the experience of being there.
Yeah, we have a good flow there. Like we're all incredibly good about communicating with each other because there's so many stations. Like it's not just like a normal coffee shop. Like we have a coffee station, we have the registers, we need someone on the dish pit all the time, we have smoothies, we have food. Like it's crazy.
Yeah.
So like when we train new people, they tend to be extremely overwhelmed, understandably.
Right.
And then plus all like the stocking of things and like making, like specifically like making drinks, like learning how to like stretch milk and all that. It's overwhelming. But we have such a good flow. It's like a constant dance. And like, we have like a special like language that we use that we all like expect the new people to learn too. So it's like a little shorthand thing. And it's great. It's absolutely hands down the best place I've ever worked.
That's awesome.
Just like the culture of it. And like I said, like we all hang out outside of work. We go to each other's like shows. We like buy each other's art. Like it's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And Jonathan's such a good guy.
He's such a good guy. Yeah. Has he been on this podcast?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. He's so like, running a business, and so it's like he's...
But he's fostered the environment where we can all have that relationship with each other.
He still cares about creativity and quality and supporting the community. You know, I feel like those are things that just get said a lot, and they're just kind of like buzzwords.
Yeah.
You know, like what...
Like synergy.
What can we do that's community-minded? But it's so often done with just like... PR in mind. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he's like, no, I want to have shows here, even though I lose money by doing it, because I value that. And yeah. I think that like the musicians in the community value it, the people who care about music in the community value it. And like, it's the kind of place I want it to be, you know? Yeah. And that's just like, I appreciate that so much, you know? And like, having a good workplace culture, and it's just like, I don't know. I think he's an awesome dude.
He is. It's great. And Pia, the manager.
Oh, she's so
beautiful,
sweet.
Beautiful angel.
Yeah, she's like so nice.
She's the mama.
That's awesome.
And then Michael Winters. So I actually started working with Michael like right when I first started working at White Heron. I came back from Europe and I was kind of just like floating around and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I logged onto Facebook one day and saw my friend Trisha LeBlanc, mm-hmm. Had these beautiful photos of herself up. And I was like, dude, where did you get these? And she was like, oh, it's this guy, Michael. He's a local guy. You should shoot him an email. And so I sent him an email and I was like, hey, I've never met you before. Do you want to like go out into the woods with me and like photograph
like, yes,
me crawling
I
around
do.
In the woods being a, like a crazy person? And he was like, 100%, I want to do that. And it was the first shoot I ever did, ended up being probably our most well-known piece that we did together, which was I was crawling in around the woods like a crazy person in my Halloween costume that I had made for myself, which was I was just like this weird like it was supposed to be like a Maenad, which was like the female worshippers of Dionysus. They're okay. like deer women.
Yeah.
So I had this like weird, crazy, like fur costume. And then I put black sclera contact lenses and they cover your whole eyeball, like even the whites. So they hurt so bad to have in, but they look so cool. And I just like crawled around in the woods, like tearing pomegranates apart with my teeth. And like, and it ended up being awesome. And like, it was shown at the 100 Club.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like that's our most well-known one.
And they're probably in the book, right?
Oh yeah. They're all in the book. I'm in that book like 20 times
that's
or
awesome.
Something. I'm the front and back inside covers.
Nice.
And we've worked together so much and like every shoot we've done, even if they haven't been like, this is my favorite, like they've all been awesome.
Yeah.
And it's, we never really plan a whole lot. Like we'll have like a general idea of what we want to do, but we just kind of show up and like see what happens. And like our other really well-known shoot was the gas mask shoot.
Oh,
have
yeah.
you seen that?
Yeah, totally.
And that,
that was
like
the
a
one
mistake.
That was blown up to a million size for
yeah,
the, for
at the
release,
book
right?
opening. Yeah. yeah. So that was a mistake. So we were doing a different shoot that day over at the 3S when they were redoing it. So uh-huh. it was all those like empty spaces upstairs. And we were doing, that weird shoot where I had the green dress on and he like photoshopped it. So I had multiple limbs.
Mm-hmm.
It was that shoot. And then we were like cleaning up, getting ready to leave. And he was like, hey, Sajan, I have a gas mask in my car. You want to just throw that on for a minute? And I was like, yeah, sure. Why not? And he brought it out and it was so cool. And so I like, we found electrical tape on the ground and I just got naked and covered all my bits with electrical tape and put on this gas mask and just like crawled around in this like asbestos filled basement.
Yeah.
And it ended up being awesome. And it was totally unplanned.
Wow.
And that's how like all the cool shit that I've done with him has turned out. Because he's such a weird, cool dude, too.
Yeah.
Like, his full-time job, he's a guidance counselor at the Portsmouth High School, like, by day, and then is this amazing photographer by night. And he does everything. Like, not everything. He's finally starting to have people pay him, which he should, because he's so talented. But most of the stuff that he does is for free.
And like, just for his
editing.
Own interest.
Yeah, because he loves it.
Yeah.
And, like, he has all this amazing equipment. He's done all this research on, like, all these really cool lighting techniques and like
well,
that's
and he,
his
he
passion
started doing that late too. Like he hasn't been doing it that long.
He took his first photo like 10 years ago,
yeah.
maybe in his 40s.
Yeah.
Like
that's awesome. That's so cool. And I think that that's, you know, a common thread of people in the artistic community around here is mm-hmm. like, I'm doing this because I want to do it. because I care about it, because I love it, you know, and it's for myself foremost, you know?
Yeah.
I've talked about that a lot in terms of music making, that like living in New York, you couldn't not think about trying to be discovered. Even if you weren't like, oh, I want to be big famous someday. Like, you have to pay for a rehearsal space. So it's like, you can't not think about
semi-lucrative
return on investment, at least, you know, like, or, you know, you're living in the media capital. So it's like, I hope that so-and-so from this website shows up or this channel or something, you know, and they never do, you know, I mean, they show up somewhere, they must, but like, being here, you just don't think that at all.
Yeah.
You know, you're just like, so why are you doing that? Because you like it, you know, just because you love it. And then once in a while, someone makes something really, really great. And it's like,
yeah, Michael's like a celebrity now.
Yeah. He's like, he's so good at it. And like, and there
you can
are
tell
so many
his photos just by looking at them. Like he has such a unique style. I don't know what it is, like the lighting, something about it. You can always tell that it's him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so good.
Has he shot you?
He shot the landladies.
Yeah, I just remembered that. When you guys all put on muumuus.
Yeah. And he's shot at my house in Elliott a bunch.
Mm-hmm. In the barn,
he shot
Trisha
there a bunch.
Yeah.
And I think Jess too. We're actually going to sell that house this summer. And I kind of want to like shoot him a message and be like, you know you want a house in Elliott, don't you?
He doesn't.
No, he doesn't. But yeah, go hang out in the barn one last time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I recorded an album in that barn with Zach Tremblay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Noah.
With Noah.
Yep. And Banjo, the barn cat.
Yes. Banjo. Banjo and Wesley did not get along.
I don't feel like they would.
No.
They're close enough to the same size that it would just be.
The one or two times that they ever actually got close, you know, Wesley acts tough until he's actually like faced with the claws, and then he's like, oh no, don't hurt me. Yeah, Banjo definitely took a swipe at him and missed by like a foot, and Wesley still cowered away in terror.
My gosh. I mean, if a cat the same size as my body was being threatening at me, I would like,
you would certainly die.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm allergic to cats, and I was once at a zoo with a girl I was dating at the time, and we were like looking at a lion or a tiger or something, and she was like, do you think you're allergic to that? And I was like, it honestly never occurred to me.
Go rub your face
on
that
lion.
If I
was close enough to find out, it would be the least of my concerns. Yeah. But yeah, it's a cat, so probably.
Probably.
Probably. Like, so what are you allergic to? Penicillin, bee stings, and lions. Okay, so I'm going to start doing like the wrap it up, like rapid fire questions.
Awesome.
Okay. What is your happy place?
Like physically or in my brain?
Both.
Physically, my happy place is in the ocean. Love salt water.
Okay.
Need it. Grew up just like being at the beach every day. In my head, my happy place is taking a magic shower, which is when you smoke a bowl and take a shower while Radiohead is playing.
Wow.
I do that like once a week.
That sounds pretty great.
Yep.
Any particular song or album? Or?
I mashed together OK Computer and In Rainbows, where I did it like track by track. So it's like the first track is OK Computer, second track is In Rainbows, and then so on and so forth.
Whoa.
And I do that.
Magic
they work
shower.
Really well
How
together.
Long does a magic shower last?
However long it needs to.
Entire duration of the two albums.
No, really. That's happened before. It's turned into a magic bath at that point. Yeah, magic showers.
I'm just going to say, regarding magic bath, you reminded me. So when we were in Egypt, we got to go into the king's chamber in the center of the Great Pyramid.
I saw your 360 on Facebook.
So we're inside the pyramid, and in that room, there's just nothing except for like a stone sarcophagus. And you get to lay in it and just like, I don't know, meditate for
That's
like
amazing.
2 minutes. And Anne said that she felt like she was just sort of like, not transported to, but like she was like cosmically connected to like another dimension. She was like, and I had this like really strong sense that like that thing that what I was laying in was like a, it was placed there specifically because I could connect to this other plane. And I really felt like another place where I can do that is in our bathtub. And I was like,
same thing.
Why not? You know? So yeah, she also takes magic baths that don't involve Radiohead or smoking a bowl, to my knowledge, but I might be wrong.
But you make your own magic. You make your own magic. That's my magic. That's my brand of magic.
What are you afraid of?
I am afraid of sharks. Horrified of sharks. My uncle has a house down on the Cape that I go to in the summertime sometime, and he has a boat, and my cousins and I will like go up on the boat, and they always go swimming like way offshore.
Yeah.
And I will not get off the boat. Absolutely not. Sharks live there.
So how does this like interplay with your first love?
Yeah. I need to be close to the shore. I can't be where my feet aren't touching.
Okay.
Or able to touch. Yeah. Like I can't do, it's cause I can't see.
Right.
I don't know what's down there.
My happy place is the shallow ocean.
Yeah. Shallow ocean right up against the shore. Because after you're past your knees, you're not on the top of the food chain anymore.
Yeah.
Like that's not real life.
That's true.
I'm really afraid of sharks. Yep. I'm really afraid that my friends don't actually like me.
Oh, I get
like
that
imposter
sometimes.
Syndrome. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, no one really like, I have that Gollum voice in my head where it's like, nobody likes you.
They likes someone else. That's really good.
Yeah. I have that. Sometimes the imposter syndrome thing. So I'm afraid of that sometimes. I know it's not real. It's just like my gross lizard brain.
No, I totally get that. I also have this sort of different but related version of it where there are days when I feel like invisible, you know, where like you'll go about your day for several hours and be like, not one person has said a single word to me.
Mm-hmm.
And like, no one's looking at me. Like,
am I real
like,
right
or
now?
Like someone will like cut you off in traffic and you'll be at first be like, fuck you. And then you'll look back on it and be like, what if they just couldn't see me at all?
Mm-hmm.
Like, am I alive?
<You know? laughs> Just floating through space.
Yeah, no, I get that sometimes, but usually it's
not real.
It's the calls coming from inside the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is the best meal you've ever eaten?
Best meal I've ever eaten. That's hard because I really love food.
Yeah.
Like a lot. I'm going to go ahead and say the first time I ever had pad thai. So yeah. I grew up, we were super poor. We never ate out. Like when we ate out, it was a big deal. And then it was at like the 99. Like that was our extent. And then I dated this guy in high school who I was really like close with his family. We dated for a bunch of years and they would take me out to dinner with them and they were really into like ethnic restaurants.
Yeah.
So they would like take me out for Indian and like it totally changed my life.
Yeah.
So they brought me to a Thai restaurant for the first time and
where was it?
It was Pan Thai 2 in Exeter.
Okay.
Cause I grew up in Hampton. Like I went to Winnicott and I went there and I'd never had Thai before. So they were like, we'll just get her some pad Thai. Cause like she'll like that. And the portions at Thai restaurants are ginormous.
Yeah.
And they did it like family style where everyone ordered a bunch of things and we all shared. And I ate the whole portion of pad Thai by myself. And I was like 15, skinny, like I'm still skinny, but I was like 100 pounds soaking wet. And I ate the whole thing and then threw up on the car ride home front of my boyfriend's family. But it was so good and I fell in love with Thai food and that summer I would go once a week. I like saved up my money for my Hannaford job and I would go and eat a pad Thai lunch there once a week alone. Yeah. I would just go by myself and I made friends with one of the waiters whose name was Peter and he would come and sit down with me and like have his lunch break with me. He's just like a 40-year-old Thai guy and it wasn't creepy. Like he was very nice. And then he had to go back to Thailand to take care of his mom because she was sick. Aww. And we like hugged and I was like, oh.
Listen, go to Thailand.
Yeah.
It's expensive to get there because it's far away. But then once you're there,
it's cheap.
Like as close to free as you can imagine. It's like,
is the exchange rate just crazy? Or?
It's, I think, well, first of all, food is just way more expensive here.
Yeah.
And they don't eat stuff that's not from there.
Yeah.
It's not like some big political statement. It's just like, you want fish? Go catch a fish, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just, and I think the exchange rate is probably favorable, but it's like, I think the most expensive meal we ate, which was like, swinging for the fences, let's get whatever we want and mm-hmm. drinks and appetizers and everything was like equivalent to maybe like $18.
Oh my God. I was going to be like, what? Like $50?
No.
Like for two people, like everything you wanted.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, most of the time
I need to go to
for
Thailand.
Two people, it was like, it was, I think like 35 baht is a dollar and a meal would be between like 400 and 500 baht. So like $12.
That's
something
crazy.
Like that. Yeah. And so freaking good.
I love Thai food.
The Thai food in Thailand is outstanding.
I believe you. It's from there.
Yes.
Yep.
And then we once went out to Thai food where the hell were we? Oh, in Prague. And I remember being really surprised that the Thai food was good. And then I was like, why is it any stranger to have good Thai food in Prague than it is to have good Thai food in New Hampshire?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's closer to Prague.
Totally. Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, Thai food is the shit. And I think like engorging yourself until you throw up is a good sign that it was a good meal.
It was so good. I could feel myself becoming ill and I could not. I was like a dog. Like, you know, dogs will just eat until they die. Like,
yes.
That's basically what happened. It was so good and I couldn't stop.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, last question. If you could do one thing every day forever, what would it be?
If I could do one thing every day forever. Win the lottery? Can I win the lottery every day forever?
Well, all right. So if you won the lottery,
if I could
anything,
do everything, it's difficult. I haven't actually like ever thought about this. I mean, I already sing every day, so I guess that's not a real thing to say. If I had the money, like if I could just like do it every day and it didn't matter like what my life was doing, probably like work out. Like I would love to just get like jacked. Like do Pilates every day, have like a personal trainer just like yell at me every day.
That's the thing that you want?
Yeah. Well, cause I used to be really fit. Like I used to be a three sport athlete and like now it sucks to work out. Like it hurts and it's shitty because you're not in shape anymore. And now I'm just like skinny. Like I used to be thin, but like muscular. And
what
now
were
I'm
your
just,
sports?
I did track and field, volleyball and cheerleading.
Wow.
And cheerleading was actually the hardest one because it was like for competition and stuff. And I am really tall for a cheerleader.
Okay.
And so I was a back. So I had to pick up girls by myself and like throw them over my head. So I had like, my lats were insane. and I really miss that. And I don't have like the willpower to like get myself in that kind of shape like ever again. So if I could have someone like make me work out, I would do that every day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so surprising.
What do most people say?
Well, I don't know. I think that there's like the nice moment of like, I already do the thing every day, which is singing, you know, so there's that. Most people don't say I would like to have someone yell at me.
Well, like with a purpose.
Yeah,
with a purpose.
I get what you mean. That's cool. Well, I think that is an attainable wish.
Yeah.
And you already do the other thing. So
yeah.
So you got it.
What would you do every day?
Ugh.
Now I mean, self-conscious of mine. So.
No, I mean, it's like probably like eat a whole pepperoni pizza or something like that. You know, like something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't. I mean, I would love to be like very physically fit, but that is like, that's not like an everyday wish.
Yeah.
Or really like most days it doesn't cross my mind.
Yeah.
It's just more of a like, oh, that would be cool. But it's not, that's not the thing that I would want to do every day. Like the thing that I would want to do every day is just like, I don't know, like play rock and roll and eat pizza.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
That sounds rad.
Yeah.
If you let me come to your rock and roll pizza party, I'll share my personal trainer with you.
Sweet. I will yell at you at the rock and roll pizza show. Drop it and give me 20.
There you go.
Sweet. Okay. Thanks for coming over.
Thanks for having me. This is great. I have to pee.